Welcome to the Countdown Podcast, where we're doing double reviews for you this week, folks.
Double
reviews. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Now we're going to do, first of all, Ricky Stenicki.
That's right.
Which dropped to, I think, Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime, not too long ago, mere days, in fact.
Yeah, and then I'm going to be covering the cinematically released Imaginary, the newest film from Blumhouse and director Jeff Wadlow.
Right. Let's wade on in with the first of our reviews, Ricky Stenicki. Paul, tell us.
Details. Is directed by Peter Farrelly. Yes, one half of
Which I found out after the movie.
Written by Jeff. Oh my God. This is written by six fucking people. Jeff Bushell, Brian Jarvis, James Lee Freeman, Peter Farrelly, Pete Jones, and Mike Cerrone. It is stars, I should say. Zac Efron, Jermaine Fowler, Andrew Citino, Lex Scott Davis, Jeff Ross, William H. Macy.
John
Cena. It's 114 minutes long, which I can already tell you is too long for a comedy, even though I haven't seen the film.
Would agree.
Wayne, what is Ricky Stenicki about?
All right, so check it out, right? Typically, when I see a comedy, I'm looking for bros. I'm looking for the bro period, okay? I'm looking for bros broing out and being bros. I like that.
That's the good version of bros, right? Not the douchey fucking.
No, just guys having. Yeah, men standing around, sitting around a bar, playing basketball, talking about ladies or themselves or whatever. Life. That's what I like doing. So I like watching it, okay? And that's, in theory, what this film is. Andrew Santino is a comic that I quite like. I like some of his podcasts. Zac Efron, and the other guy is someone I don't know.
All right, so what's the story?
They're three dudes, and they chill in, right? And ever since they were kids, they would start by getting into trouble by doing things like putting a bag of shit in front of someone's house in Halloween and whatever.
And lighting a fire.
Yeah, accidentally sets the house on fire, and they go, oh my God! And then somehow they create this character, Ricky Stenicki, by writing his name on a shirt and throwing it down there, and the cops look for him. And then all through their lives, right, they use Ricky Stenicki as a person that they use to get away from their wives, to go, oh, we got to go, Ricky's having this thing, or Ricky's sick, we got to go see him. And they all do it, right?
So it's like a podcast.
Except the podcast is real, Paul.
Yeah,
and there's evidence, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But they had to actually keep a Bible of all the stuff they said about him so that in case the wives ever figure out, like, who is this guy? What's he doing? They have a straight story. They've been doing this for like 30 years, okay? Then this thing comes up where it's like, you know, they all go away to Atlantic City to fuck around under the pretense of having done that. Andrew Santino's wife gives birth. Why weren't you there? What's going on? They had to increase the lie. And so, long story short.
Then they have to make the lie embodied.
They have to embody the lie. Human being. Yes. Okay. And they find John Cena, who is this failed actor kind of loser in fucking Vegas or whatever. And he agrees to do it.
Would I be right in saying somehow Ricky Stenicki starts to take over their lives?
Gee, Paul, you're like the plot-o-matic. What happens is he finally has to come and he's so good at actually being that guy that everyone is charmed by him, okay? So then it becomes, man, this guy's got to come back. Then, no, he's going to fucking fight Ebola in motherfucking Africa or some shit, right? And then, long story short, he then becomes imbued in their life. Okay. It is.
Hold that thought.
Please, that's
what it's about, the longest plot synopsis ever.
Sorry, yes.
On Rotten Tomatoes, 48% of 56 critics' reviews are positive. An average score of 5.3 out of 10 on Metacritic, always lower, has an assigned score of 45 out of 100 based on 22 critics, indicating mixed or average reviews. Obviously nothing from Cinema Score because there ain't no cinema release.
Right.
Most importantly then, Wayne, what do you think? And full spoilers. There is no spoiler button here. We're just going straight into spoilers for both of these films. So if you've not seen Ricky Stenicki, now is the time to turn off and you do want to see it. If you give two or zero fucks like I don't, Wayne, spoil away.
And you should not. Because, Paulie, about 20 minutes in, I wrote the following review.
20 minutes in.
20 minutes. My review was these words. I'm afraid this is a piece of shit, Paul. That was the review I wrote, right? And so I'm like, okay, let's see what goes on here. Now, to be fair, I always want a movie to be great when I watch it. That's just how it is.
Well, you know? with the occasional exception sometimes where I'm watching for the worst 10
Sometimes you stunt watch things, and that's something I've done this week. But the
Gee, why would that be top 10 last time?
Now, what I would say is the biggest issue is it's simply not funny. All right? And not only is it not funny, it's not fun.
No.
Yeah, it's not even fun. Like John Cena and Zac Efron and all that, they're doing as much as they can with this shit sandwich. All right?
Right.
But the writing is so poor. And this is what gets me. This is an Oscar-winning director,
which
Paul.
Which Farrelly brother is this?
This is the Peter Farrelly, who did fucking The Green Book.
Right.
But more importantly, he did motherfucking Me, Myself, and Irene. He did, well, him and his brother did like Something About Mary.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You know, like other shit that I really, really like.
Dumb and Dumber.
Dumb and Dumber.
Shell of Hell.
I like all of these shows. Like, apparently, and the thing, you can't even say he's nothing without his brother because he won an Oscar without him, okay? So I don't know what happened here. And by the way, he was one of the writers, and he's certainly the director.
Hold on. Have we got the right Farrelly brother here?
Nope, it's Peter Farrelly.
It is?
Yeah, he's the right one. And, you know, and this is why it's juvenile and joyless, and it plays out on jokes, and there's some masturbation jokes which I found sort of funny, but that's because I find masturbation jokes funny.
Okay, so he co-wrote.
But then, again, you just listed the rattle off like there's some
great film. Well, Something About Mary was genuinely hilarious.
But like there's six writers on this, which means it was probably a piece of shit that went back and forth.
Apparently it was around since 2010, and at one stage, he who should not be spoken about much anymore, James Franco, was attached to be involved.
Well, he's probably happy that he dodged this piece of shit. I'll tell you something, Paul. I happen to know about the production of this show because like I listened to that guy's, the Sandra and Santino's podcast, and he's like, oh, I'm shooting in Australia. And it's really obvious that they... Well, it's not obvious. It does look like an American movie, but... Do you know who Stan Grant is, Paul?
Yeah.
Okay, he's in it. Like they're watching the TV.
As like a political correspondent.
Yeah,
or something.
He's like, this is, ladies and gentlemen, Stan Grant is a Australian
journalist
presenter of some sort who you just don't see anymore, as far as I know, right?
Well, just recently, I think he left with a show he was on. Q&A maybe.
Okay, I think he also did the Olympics or something. Like he's called the Olympics once or twice. Anyway, they're watching TV and one of the characters' wives is a reporter and he's the guy on the TV show. So he's in it quite a bit, like inadvertently.
Interesting, because I'm pretty sure Stan Grant's First Nations individual.
He is indeed. He is indeed.
So if you're trying to say he's in America, then...
Oh, but he just sounds like an Aussie. So he looks Aussie to me, right? Yeah. And so like, I mean, as in not white, but Aussie. And what is actually going on here is that it is... obviously just a piece of shit that never got better. And as you can see it, right, and like you're going, oh my God, oh my God. Oh my God. And it went for, like you said, like fucking
114
nearly
minutes.
2 hours or whatever, right?
It's like Judd Apatow produces.
Way too long. So I'll say this, John Cena is the best thing about it, but even he is hard to watch. And I thought to myself, hey, Bill H. Macy is in it.
Yeah.
So and this
great
is
actor.
And this is actually a model that they do. I call it the Alec Baldwin model, where you've
here we go.
Yeah, where you've got like a sort of a relatively shit comedy, but they've somehow stretched the budget a mil or two to get an actor in here. So like Good Luck Chuck had Alec Baldwin in it in a bit part. He shot on a day or two. And his parts are the best in the film. Mm. Right? So I thought William H. Macy might
name attached to it.
Absolutely. I thought William H. Macy might do that for this. That is not the case, Paul. He's still, even William H. Macy can't save it. Ooh, and I'll tell you something else.
A little bit of this. Suck my dick.
A little bit, but I'll tell you something. Zac Efron, beautiful man. Yeah. Not that beautiful. He's showing his age now, which is normal.
Well, like all of us.
Like all of us, but I'm like, this guy was a...
Is he big in this? Is he really beefed up?
No, well, he looks like he's actually a bit chunkified.
Because I'm going to talk about a film in our top 10 last 10 this week.
Which he's in?
Where he's a wrestler in it, and he is... massive.
Yeah, I don't...
And in a beefy way. Like, he's absolutely worked out to the... absolute. He was already a big guy, already very well sculpted, but wow.
You know what I think happened? If this one was shot before that one, which I suspect happened, he was in... when you work out, Paul, you do a cut and then you do a bulk. Sorry, usually you do a bulk and then you do a cut.
Right, so maybe he was in the bulk phase.
Yeah, maybe even in the bulk phase. So he's looked a little doughy for him because he's usually a fucking... He's made of cobblestones, right? So, yeah, but that's beside the point. What I will tell you is that it is a piece of shit. You should never watch it. Don't bother. It is crap.
Anything at all redeeming you can say about this one, Wayne?
There is one thing that John Cena does as his actual job is he's an X-rated cover band guy. So there's shots of him doing, like Weird Al Yankovic of rock songs, but he makes them X-rated and about jack-offs. And it's sort of, there's a couple of Snickers in there. I will tell you that. All right.
Okay. That's as good as you
got. That's all I got, man. Wow. That's all I got. Cause I was bored watching this. Towards the end, I'm like, just end. Just fucking end. All right. I know what's going to happen. There'll be some redemption.
Yeah.
Just let it go.
How many people did you shoot on Sniper Elite 5 whilst watching this movie?
Here's what I did. 20. Because I went back and forth, right? I even played Helldivers for a second.
Oh, well, okay, we'll play Helldivers. So, Helldivers 2.
Helldivers 2, I'm sorry.
The game du jour amongst our friendship group at the moment.
Yes, I'm getting... Well, I'm not getting back into it, but I have
We've drawn Wayne back in with this.
Yes, so that's fun. But yeah, no, let me see. My rating for this is 20 out of... Well,
wow! A comedy you're giving one star to.
Yeah, because it wasted...
If you're wasting my time, enough, not bro. Knocking it.
Wasting my fucking time.
I'm all for fucking one star reviews.
No shit, Sherlock. All right, well let's get that behind us, Paul. Well, you tell me about yours.
Well, okay, geez, do we get an end? At the end, is it a resolution? Does everyone end up happily ever after? Or
yes.
Or do the men pay for their lies?
Initially, they do pay for their lies. They do have to come clean to everyone, including the boss and all these people, that he's a fake person. But then there's something where he outs himself as a fake online with Stan Grant in a news thing. And then everyone forgives these guys. And then he decides to adopt the Ricky Stenicki actual name, as in changes his name, and becomes that guy and has a root.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
It's horseshit. By then, you don't care. Yeah. By then, you don't give a fuck.
Fair enough.
So, you're done.
Wow, so Ricky Stenicki, an absolute stinker,
yes,
by all reports.
Yes, Ricky Stenicki.
And an early contender for Worst Film of the Year, Wayne? One of?
It's almost like I don't even consider it a film.
This is why you need to chart every movie you watch, like I've been telling you to do on Letterboxd since the dawn of time.
I know.
So that come the end of the year, and our worst 10 films of the year, you don't have to scramble. You just go, there it is.
Okay, you know what? I have actually started, but I haven't been
for
like...
For you to score 20 on a comedy, this will absolutely be your worst 10 of the year.
Yeah, sure. Okay, all right.
It obviously hurt you. In the way that bad horror films hurt me, Wayne.
It pissed me off. I mean, yeah. Tell us about yours, Paul.
Imaginary is a 2024 American supernatural horror film directed and produced by Jeff Wadlow and written by Wadlow, Greg Erb, and Jason Ormeland. It is, of course, a Blumhouse-produced film along with Jeff Wadlow. His name is across this thing everywhere. It stars DeWanda Weiss, Tom Payne from The Walking Dead, if you don't blink and miss him, Tegan Burns, Piper Braun, Matthew Soto, Veronica Falcon, and Betty Buckley. It is budgeted at somewhere between $10 and $12 million, and I'm maybe not surprised to say $3.6 million, but the weekend is not over yet. This is early doors. I imagine that's going to get to probably close to $8 or $9 million.
Question. Maybe. Is that considered good for a horror movie?
Well, this is the thing. Here's the model, which people listen to the show for a while now will know. I'm not a big fan of Jason Blum and his style of filmmaking.
Oh, I do know this, yes.
You've heard me tee off on it on several occasions. Jeff Wadlow being one of the absolute main instigators with Fantasy Island.
Even
from a couple of years
back,
was a massive piece of shit. And then before that, Truth or Dare, massive piece of shit.
But they do the occasional good one, is that right?
But every so often, they really throw you for a curveball. You're like, whoa.
Did they do Get Out? Was
really good. Yes, he was a producer on Get Out. So yeah, films like that just somehow slap you across the face that there's a really genuinely great,
I suppose, if you swing
producer
100.
In here. But yeah, Sinister, which I think is one of the greatest horror films of the 2010s. First Paranormal Activity, which was a revelation as well. So look, there's a whole bunch of these films.
This is the thing. If you have 1,000 diarrheas, every now and then you'll have a solid stool.
Fantasy Island was 2020. Jeez, that's a long time ago. What a mess. The Visible Man, lots of people really
liked
that one.
I liked that one.
It was a solid film. Freaky, I really enjoyed that one too. So yes, it's so hit or miss. But geez, when Blumhouse misses, they miss hard. So it's always a risk when you go into a Blumhouse film, in my opinion. And given the release schedule that was around today, and I had zero interest in Ricky Stenicki, I volunteered to go and see this one.
Shall I read you a synopsis?
Please.
When Jessica moves back into her childhood home with her family, her youngest stepdaughter Alice finds a stuffed bear named Chauncey. As Alice's behavior becomes more and more concerning, Jessica intervenes only to realize that Chauncey is much more than the stuffed toy bear she believed him to be.
Right, there you go. On Rotten Tomatoes, 30% of 57 critics' reviews are positive, with an average rating of 4.1 out of 10, lower than Ricky Stenicki.
If you can imagine such a thing.
On Metacritic, this has a weighted score of 35 out of 100, also lower than Ricky Stenicki, based on 16 critics indicating generally unfavorable reviews. And audiences surveyed by CinemaScore so far gave the average grade only of C+ on the A+ to F scale. Not a good pedigree at all.
But the important thing, Paul, is...
What did I think? And yet, Wayne, sometimes I'm pleasantly surprised, but Blumhouse, sometimes I'm genuinely shocked. And sometimes I think you would love a Blumhouse film.
Hmm? Well, occasionally I do.
This is not one of those fucking times.
Ah...
Tremble before me, terrible films and television shows.
Okay, one moment. For new listeners, that is Paul's bullshit Negatron drop.
Everyone understood.
No one understood. Because no one understood.
It's a, what's the word? Aspect of my personality I've embraced.
The ideology being that he's negative about it and negative. Hence is now Negatron.
Negatron.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and whereas Wayne is often Optimus.
Optimist Prime. That's it. Yeah, sorry. Keep going. Transformers aside.
Not today. Wayne, imagine that you are so shit at your job, so shit, that when you spectacularly fail by delivering a creative, massive piece of shit that nobody thinks is any good, yet somehow, remarkably, because you kept it within a reasonable budget, it made a tiny bit of money.
I've actually been in that spot, Paul.
And then your boss goes, you know what? Give you another one here. Here's a slightly smaller budget, but go again. And somehow you make a slight amount of money yet again. Not because you show any skill or nous or creativity whatsoever.
Yeah.
But just because people like me exist in the world who will go and see a horror film because it's a horror film.
I often tell you, you are your own worst enemy.
And it got a cinematic release. Therefore, chances are it must be good.
You went to the movies, this?
Yeah. I did.
Okay. Let's hear it, Paul. What happened?
Jeff Wadlow is the actual, literal human definition of failing upwards.
Ah.
This man who made Truth or Dare, shit. Fantasy Island, so bad, has now topped both of them with absolutely, unquestionably, one of the worst horror films ever made.
Whoa.
For a $10 to $12 million budget, there is not one single scare in this entire movie. Tries fucking hard. Really tries hard with the pullback, oh, there's something there, or 75 different shots of something lurking in the background out of focus that when the person turns around isn't there, or on the next shot is not there
anymore.
That's
fucking annoying. It's annoying when it keeps going.
It's funny one, funny. It could potentially be scary two or three times. Witness the Strangers as a perfect example of how to have things happening in the background and be genuinely creepy and unsettling.
But not,
not this fucking movie,
yeah.
Which leans so hard on that. And then just when you think it can't get any worse, some of the dialogue, some of the acting in this film is appalling beyond description.
Who's in this? Does anyone we know?
No one. I don't know who DeWanda Weiss is. To be fair, she's the best of a bad bunch of people. She's trying really hard to convey something. But there are so many undercooked ideas in this film. There are so many ridiculous plot elements. Of course, it's a horror movie about an imaginary stuffed bear that's a demon or monster. Where the fuck
I mean,
is
this just Chucky?
It's nowhere near as good.
Okay.
Nowhere near as good.
Yeah.
As if you had problems with Child's Play,
yeah,
in the believability of that whole thing,
yeah,
then strap yourself in, my friend.
I'm intrigued as to what the bear looks like, Paul. Can you describe him?
The bear looks,
is he cute?
It looks like an old bear. It's not fallen apart, but no one would buy one today.
Has it got teeth or anything? Does it do anything?
No, when it turns into a monster, the only other positive other than DeWanda Weiss trying hard in the opening role, starring role, get there in the end, is the practical effects of the bear towards the end of the movie when it turns into the monster that it actually... Well, I can't even say that coherently because sometimes it looks like a big teddy bear monster and sometimes it looks like this sort of demonic spidery thing with tentacles.
Oh, because I'm looking
Can't even make up its fucking mind what it looks like.
Yeah, I'm looking at the poster now and yeah, okay.
You can see the bear there in the corner if you've got the same poster I've got on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
So, look, it's everything you've seen before. They move back into this house. Okay. Trauma is a funny thing. I understand this as a psychologist, and it affects the mind in strange ways. But this film leans on the fact that she remembers nothing from the time that she lived in this house to the time that she went to live with her grandmother. And it makes zero fucking sense, especially since memory is nodular. When you're reminded of certain things, it connects to other things, and then you get there in the end. So it's a big crutch to lean on that this person remembers nothing.
Okay. And as a clinician, you can attest that that is unlikely?
Well, in this scenario, if you went back into the house, very, very likely it's going to trigger memories, big memories. Even so, that the dad has continued to own this house in the intervening years. And I guess she's in her early 30s, maybe mid-30s.
Okay.
So it's 30 years later. Even all the drawings she did on the wall are still there. You're trying to tell me that doesn't incite memories.
No. You're going to remember that.
Absolutely fucking ridiculous. Because the film relies upon her remembering nothing until this big revelation, which is meant to be a twist. It's not a twist. It's shit. It's fucking shit that she used to have this same Chauncey bear. The fucking bear in the dialogue with the kid tells you this. This is absolute amateur hour in terms of its writing, in terms of its direction. The only reasonable part is the bear. At one stage, they move going to this imaginary or this fantasy world where it looks like is it M.C. Escher? The sort of staircase is going to nowhere. They just totally rip that off. Like, there's nothing here that's original.
Wow.
It is like an amalgamation of Child's Play with a whole bunch of shit other sort of, oh, kids are seeing things before the adults do. And normally you'd have the father figure in this film. Yeah. She is the stepmother, effectively. So the kids aren't her own.
Yep.
She's married a guy who's gotten out of a relationship, who got out of a relationship with the mother of the children because she's crazy.
Mm.
She pops up in the film for like 3.5 seconds to scream, "There's something in the house!" But because the implication is she literally physically abused her children in terms of like burning them and shit like that. But they don't go there because it's a PG-13 horror film. They don't go there too hard.
Oh, it's PG-13.
They just show a little bit of a burn mark on a kid's arm occasionally.
It's a PG-13 horror film.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is the definitive answer to sleep issues. If you are insomniac, watch this fucking film.
Let me ask you this. If it had been an R-rated film...
No, wouldn't have helped it.
Wouldn't have helped it?
No.
Okay, so this is nothing here for
the... Okay, as I said, in spoilers, one fucking person dies this entire movie, happens off screen, and then you see a pool of blood go underneath the door.
Okay.
That's it. It doesn't even cater to that crowd. This is a nothing film with nothing for anyone who likes horror whatsoever.
What?
Now, I've said these things. I've triggered at least half a dozen, probably 10 to 15 people. This is podcast. Fucking Paul reckons it's that shit. I'm going to check it out.
Absolutely.
And prove him wrong. You probably will find more to enjoy. But this went to cinemas, people. This is not straight to fucking Tubi or anything like that. And if it was straight to Tubi, I'd still be dark enough, but I wouldn't be as dark as I am about this shit. That Jason Blum, apparently a horror production expert, and Jeff Wadlow has had more fucking swings at bat than most people get in their entire career to make a good film.
Mm.
They both fucking suck.
Mm.
They've thrown it out there, $10, $12 million. They've made it in about 2.5 fucking weeks, along with then the post-production happens, and they expect people to lap it up, and I hope this $3.6 million equates to only about $7 million opening weekend, and I hope it peters out at $15 fucking million and that we don't get any more of this piece of shit, fucked up shit.
Okay, angry. You're remotely dismissed, dismayed by it, shall we say.
Even the end of the film, the revelation her dad has got dementia. Oh, he got dementia because he looked into the eyes of this creature as he rescued her.
Oh, really?
And then she looks into the eyes of this creature that rescued her, but she's fine.
Yeah, it's bullshit. Inconsistency
it's just
is crap.
That kind of shit.
Do you know, I'm curious now, how this works.
Oh, I meant to say Tom Payne, he's the father.
Who's that?
He's the guy from Walking Dead, Jesus from The Walking Dead.
All right.
He literally gets in a car and disappears from the film. He's in about three scenes. I'm like, he's second build.
Is he the Alec Baldwin?
Tom? You don't even know who Tom Payne is?
No, there's no way. No.
I think Betsy, whatever the fucking name is, who's this nosy neighbor who's hilariously bad in her acting. Betty Buckley.
Mm, okay.
Now I'm going to click on her. She's 76 years old. What's she been in? So apparently she's a singer. She was in Carrie and she was in Frantic.
Like the Carrie?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And she was in Split. She was a doctor in Split.
I sort of remember her.
There
nice.
You go. So okay. That's really all I've got from her looking at the rest of this shit. She was even wider back in 1994,
Kevin Costner.
Probably Kevin Costner on that one.
Okay. I have a question for you.
She's really bad. Oh, yeah. She's this neighbor who just pops up as Exposition Central, but then it turns out she's got a more... It's just such a ridiculous villainous turn from her at the end. I'm like, oh, fucking hell, come on. What are you doing, film? What are you doing?
What makes me curious is that the fact that these keep happening, right? And I know
the
factor is you, people like you.
Yep.
Right? Keep going, see them. But... like, what is the economic of a shitty film like this? Like, you would think to yourself, how could it possibly make money unless there's deals being made under the table from distributors?
Well,
like,
if
it cost me 7 or 10 or whatever million
dollars
to
make. It was 10 to 12, apparently. And if we double that, we say it needs to make $25 million to go into profit.
Right. How does it do that? Like, it must be like at the back end, they sell it to a streaming service for $10 million.
Well, it could be. But again, this might end up making $25 million. Maybe it makes $50 million. It's just so reprehensibly bad.
I heard
it doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, I heard somewhere that the economics of mockbuster movies, which are shitty sort of
rip-offs. Yeah, but this is too expensive. This is not a fucking asylum film.
Yeah.
This is a studio.
So that's why
release.
I'm wondering how it happens. So there you are.
I think Universal, is that who? No, not Universal. I do apologize to you. Everyone at Universal. It's a Lionsgate film.
Amazing.
So not as big a Universal, but it's a studio.
It's a studio release.
It's been distributed. They said this is good enough not to go to streaming, whereas things like Prey were made, went straight to Hulu. Holy shit.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Somebody.
That's crazy.
Somebody got this fucked up real bad.
Yeah.
Is what I'm trying to say.
Well,
and
Paul,
it ends in a wet fart of a moment where they all walk out there happily ever after, except the crazy neighbor who is the one that died. And everyone's fine. And the dad comes back and says, whoa, geez, I was away for all that time. Lucky. And the house burns down and hooray. Oh, then, of course, we get a nonsensical promise of potentially another film when there's another bear that looks just like Chauncey and some other kids holding it in the hotel they walk into. And then the camera lingers on the bear. Is the bear going to move? Is it still back there again? Who knows? It goes to fade to black.
Mm.
Fuck this movie.
Yeah, you've been a rod for your own back, Paul. I say.
Fuck this movie. It's this kind of film that makes me question not only my life choices and this podcast, but whether or not I should get involved in horror anymore.
maybe you should make the movies, Paul. Maybe you should write a script at the very least, because you're a bit of a writer.
Could not make a worse film if I tried.
See, that's what I mean. If you took a shit on a piece of paper.
Reaper's better than this movie.
Ooh. Reaper's a movie we made, everyone.
Right, yeah, almost 30 years ago.
Yeah, 30 years ago.
It's better than this piece of shit.
Well, now you're talking, because now I see where you're going with this.
All right. 16, Wayne. 16 out of 20. Fucking lucky to even get that high. I'm even angrier now that I'm talking about it with you and openly with our dear listeners. I'm sorry that you've had to just listen to me lose my mind. But please, if you listen to anything I say, don't put your hard-earned down on the counter for this film. It does not deserve it. Blumhouse does not deserve your dollars. And I want less of these pieces of shit diluting
the
genuine horror films, the good ones that get released that are out there.
Well, two pieces of shit for you today, ladies and gentlemen.
This is as about as negative as the countdown tends to get.
That's how it goes. We better get this off now, or people are just going to stop listening.
We should. We should move on. And you can let us know if you disagree with any of these two films and our reviews of them. Let us know. We are always keen to hear contrary opinions. Or if you've felt the pain and you want to sympathize with us, you can let us know via email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter, X at @thecountdownpc. You can like and follow the show through Podbean, where we host. And check out thecountdownpodcast.com for links to everything else, including our Patreon and exclusive content that is there. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been the underused soundbook. I just could have pressed buttons all day long about some of these films.
Well, this is the dumbest shit anyone ever said in the history of, and I don't think I'm exaggerating here, time.
Actually, probably should have gone with something more like...
You should have just not played it at all.
No, shut up. All right, we're out of here. See ya.